This is episode 154 of That Shakespeare Life. Today's episode is brought to you by Experience Shakespeare. Experience Shakespeare is the membership arm of That Shakespeare Life that offers you monthly digital history activity kits that let you try at home the history you learn about on the show. They work like science labs for history. Stay tuned after the episode for even more details.
Hi, I am Emily Ireson, Townhouse Steward at the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust. Another great method for studying William Shakespeare includes listening to this. It's That Shakespeare Life with my friend Cassidy Cash.
There were several of these puppet troupes or companies, but they weren't always mentioned by names in writings of the time. Many were small and operated by three people, typically a narrator out front, dressed in their finest, and one or two puppeteers behind the stage operating the puppets.
Welcome to That Shakespeare Life with Cassidy Cash. Cassidy believes that if you desire to successfully learn or perform Shakespeare's plays, then understanding the real life and history of William Shakespeare himself is a must. That Shakespeare Life is the podcast that helps you go beyond the curtain of some of Shakespeare's most iconic works and explore the world of early modern England as Shakespeare would have lived it, learning from the writers, historians, and performers who know it best. And now, here's Cassidy.
According to an article on the Victoria and Albert Museum website, puppetry is an art form in Britain that can be traced back over 600 years, with the first recorded puppet theater performance in London happening around 1600 when William Shakespeare was 36 years old. Medieval clergy used puppets to tell Bible stories, with one performance at Coventry in 1599 featuring a puppet version of the devil. When theaters like Shakespeare's Globe were closed due to plague, puppet theaters were still allowed to remain open, often traveling the country with puppet performances in tow to entertain all around Britain. While the rod and string puppets we know today as marionettes would not flourish in England until the 18th century, for Shakespeare's lifetime, glove puppets were the star of the show, and shadow puppets can be found in woodcuts and engravings of the period. Shakespeare himself uses the word puppet in his plays at least 11 times. And here today to help us explore the world of puppets for Shakespeare's lifetime is our guest, Maureen Benfer. Maureen Benfer is an artist and craftsman with the Society for Creative Anachronism, a group that specializes in recreating elements of the pre-16th century history without the social restrictions that were true for the time period. Maureen specializes in the study of Tudor material culture and specifically puppets, children's toys, and early modern fashion dolls. Maureen uses experimental archaeology and sewing techniques to reproduce highly detailed replica fashion dolls featuring period clothing, authentic materials, and Tudor accessories. Maureen is the owner and lead historian at Tudorosity, a blog and YouTube channel that explores her research into the history of Tudor England. Find more about Maureen and links to her channel in the show notes for today's episode. Hello, Maureen. Welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
Medieval clergymen would use puppets to tell Bible stories. Maureen, by the 16th century, were puppet shows a regular part of the secular theater industry in England?
Yes, actually, the secular theater industry was alive and well during the 16th century. Puppet theater developed alongside traditional theater and made its contributions to the development of secular theater. Puppet plays actually started inside the church on feast days. With the eventual development of raucous, or what we know today as like a bawdy humor, this type of humor was uncouthly loud and wasn't tolerated in the church. And consequently, puppet theaters were moved outside the church building. This change in location actually happened before the 16th century, and this is one of the many steps that developed into secular theater that was occurring during Shakespeare's lifetime. We have an early example from a Flemish manuscript, Lee Roman's Dubon Roy Alexander, which was illuminated between 1338 and 1344. In the painted scene, we see a puppet theater with two particular puppets, one that happens to be holding more of a club-like item, so to speak. And this is what we would consider a possible Punch or Judy. These two puppets are interacting while three women are standing nearby watching the show. This depiction proves this particular type of humor skit was developed way earlier in the theater entertainment than what we see that comes to England. Punch and Judy was developed in Italy popular to the European continent. Took a while to get to England after Shakespeare's lifetime, though the popularity of the skit would have been known by word of mouth. And a lot of the tradition for puppetry is passed down through word of mouth.
We know that Shakespeare's human theater had playing companies like the Lord Chamberlain's Men or the Queen's Men. Did puppet theater also have this kind of playing company setup? And if so, what were the ones most popular during Shakespeare's lifetime?
There were several of these puppet troupes or companies, but they weren't always mentioned by names in writings of the time. Many were small and operated by three people, typically a narrator out front, dressed in their finest, and one or two puppeteers behind the stage operating the puppets. There is a puppet showman of note. His name was Captain Pod. He was a native to England and exhibited in 1599. It's mentioned by Shakespeare's contemporary Ben Jonson in Every Man Out His Humor and Epigrams. It talks about Captain Pod and puppetry. There are other puppet showmen of note after Shakespeare's lifetime, and puppet shows reached their peak popularity in the 18th and 19th centuries. Those were written about more often and were mentioned by name.
When we say puppets, I think about the marionettes with strings and rods that control from above these wooden human-like figures performing on a small stage. Maureen, what were the puppets like mechanically for Shakespeare's lifetime? You mentioned theater companies having people that had to operate these puppets, but did they have this string and rod approach, or were there other kinds of puppets going on at this time?
There were several different kinds going on. The earliest development would have been the glove puppet. We see that in several manuscripts, and the glove puppet would happen to have a hollow head and a fabric body to be manipulated by the human hand on the inside of the puppet. Now, this style was operated from below by keeping the arm over the head and watching the movements by looking up. The puppet master's body would have been hidden by the theater set itself. And these eventually gave way to the new style of puppet, the marionette, which was developed in Italy probably around the 15th, 16th century. It became quickly popular, and the use of marionettes spread on the European continent. Notably in France and Italy, they featured articulated wooden bodies which were covered in detailed clothing and manipulated by strings or wires from above. So this changed the mechanic from operating from below to above. Puppet masters were normally hidden, of course, by the set dressing either way. Eventually, puppet theater troupes brought this style of puppet to England. The detail on marionettes was finer than their glove puppet counterparts. There were subtle details with finer, more delicate movements, which made them very lifelike. This development in puppet technology caused quite a stir during the time. There were public accusations of wizardry noted in France and Italy, but were later unfounded. During Shakespeare's time, there were rod puppets, but they were more in Asian shadow theater and weren't really used in Europe.
In Italy, there was this, as you mentioned, much larger presence of puppetry in this 15th, 16th century time period as compared to England. And many of the words, like marionette, come from Italian, where these art forms were flourishing. Maureen, were the puppet masters and puppet theater owners in England native to the country, or were the puppet theaters happening in England conducted by someone that immigrated from places like Italy?
It's more likely a result of immigration. We have a record of 1573, where the first permanent theater for Italian marionettes was established in London. So therefore, those folks would have been coming from Italy and emigrating, which during that time frame with this introduction of the marionette, it made an impression on Shakespeare. He had mentioned puppets repeatedly in his writings going forward. And in 1609, there was a new puppet theater, which featured French marionettes, also appeared in London. It also was of note here that marionettes must have been a very fine quality, as Shakespeare's contemporary Ben Jonson referred to, in particular, their movable eyes. We do see Captain Pod, who is a native to England, eventually begin his own puppet company and was influential enough to be written about in 1599. So it's kind of a combination. It was brought over by immigrants and then became part of the English culture.
Were Shakespeare's plays ever performed by puppet theaters in the 16th century?
Eventually, Shakespeare's plays were performed by puppets, but more likely after Shakespeare's lifetime. In 1666, there's a puppet showman named Michael Daniel Trow who visited Lüneburg, Germany, and he listed the play of King Lear in his repertoire of 25 plays. Now, while researching, I read mentions of Macbeth, Hamlet, Two Gentlemen of Verona, and other Shakespearean titles performed in the courts of Queen Anne and Charles II by puppets. But it seems to be after his lifetime.
Would puppet owners have made their own puppets, or were these things commercially available in the 16th century? Could you go out and buy one?
At first, the puppets would have been made out of easily to acquire materials or fabric scraps. It would have been costly to use new materials during Shakespeare's time, and these would have been made by the puppet masters in the beginning. Eventually, a lucrative company could have been hired a particular craftsman to travel with, let's say, the puppet company or troupe to maintain the collection of puppets and make new ones for premiering shows. In the 16th century, a puppet would have been made to order if it was purchased. So you technically could have bought one, but it would have been costly. As doll makers actually existed since the 14th century, eventually attaining their own artisan guild, puppets are a specialized type of doll, and many were made of lightweight wood and fabric components. Purchasing a puppet would be dependent if the puppet master didn't have the skills to make their own, although the puppet master would have had knowledge of the operation to perform the storytelling.
When Maureen recreated a 16th century puppet herself, she selected what she calls, quote, untraditional materials, end quote, opting for a cloth base instead of wood or clay. Maureen, what materials would have been used to make a traditional Elizabethan puppet?
Wood would have been the most common material, especially linden, a very lightweight and easy to carve wood, followed by clay. At the time I wrote my research, I didn't know how to carve wood. My sculpting skills were not up to par, although I had fabric in abundance and a lot of practice at sewing. So I went with the most common material on hand, keeping to original practice from the period. Puppeteers or puppet masters would have used what was on hand. Now, wood carving is a skill I just acquired during the 2020 pandemic. I hand-carved a 3-foot-tall fashion doll in about 8 months. And with that particular wood carving experience, I learned about the species of wood to make a puppet, which European, what it's called lime wood. It's not a relation to the citrus tree. Otherwise, it's known by another name called linden wood in modern day. It's lightweight, easy to shape, and would be great for a marionette or puppet.
Maureen's work indicates she specifically added, quote, period details, end quote, to the costumes for her puppets. Maureen, what kind of period details did you select for your puppets' clothes?
These were period correct details in the form that it was based on material choices during the project planning stage for the marionettes I made. I used silk, wool, and cotton fabrics. Regarding the clothing, they are mimicking the slashed details that were observed from court clothing and portraiture during the Elizabethan era. I made a conscious decision to not substitute for more modern, cheaper, and easier to acquire materials for the sake of cost. Although I didn't use freshwater pearls when I was decorating their costumes, due to weight, I used plastic ones at the time. It's about the only other substitution that I did. With the decision to stick to the most materials that were available during the 16th century, I was able to make a more representative project. Now, since having completed this project, my skills have developed well past, and I would definitely look to reconsider remaking this project and seeing if I can make it even closer to a more detailed and finely crafted marionette.
It would be interesting to me to see if you did add something like freshwater pearls. The weight of the puppet is intriguing to me as to whether that would be part of the skill of being a puppet master, is being able to control the puppet when it's heavier than the ones that we think of today. Mm-hmm. Who were the people that were controlling the puppets? Do we have records of people from Shakespeare's lifetime that made entire careers out of being puppet masters?
Well, Captain Pod was mentioned in 1599 as the first English puppet showman. I do have a source of a playwright in the court of Mary, Queen of Scots. His name was George Buchanan, who authored plays for his queen written to be performed by puppets. A puppet showman as a career was a borderline profession at first. It wasn't quite seen as reputable, although with the popularity of puppet plays aided to keep this form of entertainment going as far as that goes. Just the popularity kept it moving forward.
People still wanted to see this, so somebody's got to step up and do it. Yeah,
exactly. Over time, with the lifelike details and the improved acting, the elaborate set designs, puppet theater became an accepted form of entertainment, and the stigma eventually subsided and the industry bloomed well into the 18th century and beyond.
When Maureen describes the costumes for her male puppet, she describes that she gave them Elizabethan slops and that she tied his cape with an Elizabethan knot. Maureen, what exactly is a slop and how did you create one for this project?
A slop is a men's garment that's fitted at the waist and the buttocks, but features loose and puffy legs with the length reaching to about mid-knee or down to the knee. Now, this garment was a predecessor to breeches or trousers. And depending on the cut of this garment, they could puff out and be decorated with slash contrasting materials, trims, things of this nature. They were worn over a pair of woolen or silken hose. And in Shakespeare's time, there was a practicality of dressing in layers for warmth. And basically, I was giving my puppet clothing from the time period. In regards to the Elizabethan knot, this was a different way of tying a knot as compared to the way that we modernly tie our shoes. Instead of taking two strings of ribbon and tying them in the middle and forming a bow tie, both strings or ribbons were gathered in the same hand and looped in one single knot. This type of closure was commonly seen in clothing, particularly where they had sleeves that were separate and they would tie them on up at the shoulder. It wasn't just seen as a practical knot, but it also had a decorative element too. So you do see it even in noble persons' clothing from the time.
This is so fascinating. The whole world of puppets and the idea of being able to recreate them. You've got me wanting to go and like make my own puppet now, though I'm not even sure I could accomplish that. Looking at what you've been able to create, it looks really impressive. I know we would love to learn more about puppets. What are some of your favorite books or resources you can recommend that we check out? Maybe some that you use to put your puppets together.
Of course. My main source is a book called Dolls and Puppets by Max Bowen. It's an older book, but it's jam-packed with information. It's also referenced in many other source books on the topic of dolls and puppets. So I keep running into it regularly during my research. Another one that's really great is called Toys by Antonia Fraser. It's a very broad book, but it does have an excellent section on puppets and how they developed and what they were made from. And for more English-specific source, there's a book called English Dolls, Effigies, and Puppets by Alice K. Early. It also has a lot of useful information. It does cross-reference with Max Bowen's research as well. But by far, my favorite resource is a research paper written by Edinburgh Castle Research called The Dolls of Mary Queen of Scots, written by Dr. Michael Pierce. It's a research paper, but it gives some revealing information on how the affluent use dolls and puppets at court. And this particular research is available online and free to download.
Awesome. We'll make sure to link to these books as well as that research paper in the show notes for today's episode. So make sure you go there to find those. Now, Maureen, we ask everyone this next question here at That Shakespeare Life, and that's, what's the one book you would take with you on a deserted island? My friends in England tell me I'm supposed to allow you the complete works of Shakespeare and a copy of the Bible. So your choice would be in addition to those.
This was actually more challenging than it appears. I really had to think about this one. I'm a utilitarian type of person, and I enjoy well-made tools. So I'd want a book on survival skills so I could make tools and use the resources on the island to live. And I know I would have some entertainment because I would have Shakespeare's collective works plus the Bible for leisure and inspiration.
That's excellent selection. You would be well set up on your deserted island with that choice. So what's next for you? What are you working on now that you're excited about? Are you building more puppets?
I'm working on a few different things. A long-term goal of mine is actually to write a book about fashion dolls from about 1100 to 1700. While I was researching the topic, there seems to be a gap in the research. You run into a lot about dolls after 1700. So dolls from colonial times and dolls from Victorian times, but you're not running into very much about medieval dolls. And a lot of the research that I cited before is from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. So it'd be nice to refresh the information and add in some new information as well. And I've been researching this particular topic for a couple decades now. So that's also be nice to add in bits that I have found as well. And recently I completed a hand-carved, hand-painted, hand-sewn 3-foot fashion doll within 8 months. At this time, I'm making more clothing for her, fixing some of my Tudor clothing for the Society for Creative Anachronism. Events are unfortunately still postponed well into 2021. That's what I'm up to right now.
Thank you, Maureen Benfer, so much for being here and talking with us about 16th century puppets.
Oh, you're welcome.
As always, the show notes are where it's at for each episode. They are packed with images, archival woodcuts, and all of the visual portions of the episode that you can see right inside the show notes. We also include links to recommended resources. So if you want to explore this topic further, we list a whole group of books that you can use to do that. And new on That Shakespeare Life, we now have a coordinating history guide for each episode, which means there is a free ebook you can download on 16th century puppets right from the show notes of today's episode. That ebook is connected to a complete lesson pack that's available for purchase in That Shakespeare Shop that includes things like worksheets, word searches, writing prompts, and more, so you can take the topic from today's podcast episode and easily use it in your classroom. Find all of these things and where to connect with Maureen and her research and to find out more about the Society for Creative Anachronism, all packed into the show notes for today's episode at CassidyCash.com/episode154. That's CassidyCash.com/EP154. During our interview, Maureen brings one of her replica fashion dolls based on a portrait from 1572 into the studio and gives us a tour of how she created this doll and the Tudor garments the doll is wearing. Because her tour of the replica doll is so visual, we aren't able to share that portion of our talk on the podcast, but it is included in the video version of today's podcast episode that you can find streaming right now on our YouTube channel. Find that completely free. Watch it at youtube.com/C/CassidyCash. While you're there, be sure to subscribe to the channel because video versions of our episodes with bonus content like this are shared every Monday. That's it for this week. Thank you for being here. I'm Cassidy Cash, and I hope you learned something new about the Bard. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to That Shakespeare Life. As always, the best conversations happen after the episode over at CassidyCash.com. Become a part of a vibrant Shakespeare conversation by adding your voice over at the website. Until next time, remember, when you want to know William Shakespeare, you have to go behind the curtain and into That Shakespeare Life.